Raised in Tanzania, admitted to Yale University and later to its MPH program, he was then admitted to Harvard Medical School. And as an M1 at HMS, he decided to help other international students applying to U.S. med schools by starting the mentoring organization F1 Doctors. Let's hear his story.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Welcome to the 388th episode of Admission Straight Talk. Thanks so much for tuning in. Before I introduce today's guest, I have to ask you, are you really ready to apply to your dream medical schools? Are you competitive at your target programs? Accepted's Med School Admissions Calculator can give you a quick reality check. Just go to accepted.com/medquiz, complete the quiz, and you'll not only get an assessment of your competitiveness, but tips on how to improve your chances of acceptance. Plus, it's all free. Again, use the calculator at accepted.com/medquiz to obtain your free assessment. Our guest today is Azan Virji. Azan grew up in Tanzania and came to the U.S. as a student at Yale University, where he studied molecular, cellular, and developmental biology and was a Yale Global Health Scholar. He earned his MPH in 2019, also from Yale, and then went on to begin his medical studies at Harvard in 2019. Knowing all too well the difficulties facing international applicants to U.S. medical schools, which were exacerbated by the corona pandemic and linked visa policy changes, Azan founded F1 Doctors in May 2020. Its mission is to, quote, provide a network of international medical students, dental students, residents, and attendings for mentorship and guidance as other international students struggle to pursue their med school dreams. Azan, welcome to Admission Straight Talk. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much, Linda. Like, really excited to be here.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit about your background? I know you grew up in Tanzania, but a little bit more detail. And why did you decide to pursue your college studies in the United States?
I was born in Kenya, which is sort of neighboring Tanzania. But then I grew up in Tanzania. And because my mom is from Kenya and my dad is from Tanzania, so I think of myself as sort of an East African baby. And I went to high school there as well. So I spent 18 years of my life going to high school in Mwanza, Tanzania. So it was a pretty small high school. My graduating class at the end was almost 24 students. And in school, I was the person who would always volunteer to do things, was always really interested in like getting leadership activities and getting leadership experiences. So I was what we call the head boy at the time, which is kind of It's based
British
on the
term, isn't it?
Yeah, the British curriculum, where it's like you're responsible for you're basically the link between the students and the faculty. And then I was also a really big theater nerd, so I used to do plays regularly and used to sing a lot. And on top of all of that, was really hardworking, and I wanted to focus on academics and really wanted to do good in school. That was my time in high school. And then I applied to colleges, mostly here in the United States. And the reason for that was because it was actually twofold. So for starters, I really wanted to go to some of the institutions here in the US. I think it's, you know, it's pretty obvious that some of the best institutions of higher learning are here in the United States. And, you know, some of the world-class research happens here. And I really wanted to be a part of that environment. But on top of that, I also come from a very low-income background. So I'm first-generation low-income student, and I really needed financial support to attend a place of higher learning. It's something that I couldn't afford on my own. And the United States, particularly a lot of colleges here, do have a lot of generous financial aid packages that they offer to attract international students from the rest of the world. And I got a great financial aid package to attend Yale, and that's how I finally found myself, after having never left East Africa, I found myself in the U.S. for the very first time almost 6 years ago now.
Was it, I mean, that's a long way to go.
Yeah.
Not just geographically.
Yeah. It was definitely quite a culture shock in the beginning, trying to get used to the different way of learning. I think that was
really
hard for me. Yeah. Particularly when it comes to, you know, writing essays in English, that's something I really struggled with when I first came here. It's because the way I was taught to write essays was very different And so I found myself struggling a lot when it came to English writing classes when I got here.
But the language of instruction in your high school was English, right?
It was. No, it definitely was. But it was still just, I don't know what it was, just the way you phrase your arguments and the way you structure your paragraphs just really got to me. And I also found myself underestimating the level of intensity of classes. So when I came in, I thought I'd already done organic chemistry before. And so I thought I'd be fully well equipped for, you know, sophomore organic chemistry. So I joined a sophomore level course, even though there was a freshman level course that was available. That was a poor decision that I made. And I struggled all through that course because I didn't realize that the whole concept of a quiz and a midterm and an exam and being constantly tested is very different to what happens in like the UK system, where it's you have maybe a midterm and then a final exam and that's it, or just a final a lot of times. So that was, you know, it was hard to switch my mind into thinking that every single week I need to be studying, every single week there's homework to do, every single week there's a quiz, and that was just hard to navigate.
You obviously adjusted. I'm amazed to a certain extent. I'm very impressed. And were any of your fellow students in high school, did any of them come to the United States or go to England?
A few of them did, yeah. Okay. I think the school that I attended lent itself to the fact that many students went all across the world for higher education. So We had students who go to the UK, some went to Australia, some went to Europe, and some came to the US as well.
All right, great. When did you decide to become a doctor?
So I've actually always wanted to be a physician. I think initially I knew I really was passionate about the biological sciences and I was drawn to it. And I was really excited to study for the biological sciences over any of my other subjects. So that's how I initially realized. But then I think after being exposed to the patient population in Tanzania, that's where I fully realized that I wanted to be a physician. I wanted to help out these individuals who don't have a lot of access to healthcare and who are suffering from infectious diseases that are very easily treatable. That was sort of my first inclination of I wanted to be a physician. And ever since then, I think it's just always been the goal. But now I'm finding myself also transitioning into realizing I may want to do a little more healthcare administrative work as well. That's been an interesting career trajectory.
Did you like volunteer as a high school student when you were in Tanzania, or was that part of the experience that convinced you doctor medicine is the path for you?
Yeah, I did. So I did a little bit of lab work initially. So just working in a lab and helping the lab techs run tests. But then after that, I decided to slowly made my way into the consultation room with the physician. Mm-hmm. And it was just so baffling to see that there's diseases that individuals keep getting constantly. And this is sort of like ties into my interest with public health as well, is that you will see that a patient will come in with malaria, get treated for it, and then just 2 or 3 weeks later will come back again with malaria. It's hard when you're in a country that access to healthcare is pretty low, and for every single individual there's an opportunity cost that they have to be thinking about, right? So as a farmer in rural Tanzania, you have the option of taking a sick day and going to the hospital and getting treated, or continuing to work so that you can put food on the table for your family. And so I think it was really hard to see that, you know, those two choices that individuals often have to make, pretty hard choices that they have to make. And that's where I realized that I definitely want to be more involved with providing care to these individuals who in some ways don't have a choice.
So that obviously, I guess, led you to go for the MPH. When did you decide to do that? And how did you happen to decide to do it before the MD? I think sometimes people do it before the MD, but a lot of times they do it alongside or as a part of the MD education.
So given this large interest in, you know, the health of the population and how to alleviate healthcare access and break down stigma when it comes to certain disorders and all these different healthcare interventions that I knew were a big part of public health. So ever when I came to Yale, this is something I started to explore a little more. And that's when I became the Global Health Scholar, did a lot of global health projects as well during my time at Yale. And at Yale, they actually had this really cool program where you start your master's degree in your senior year of college. And so that sort of made it perfect in some ways, because I knew I was really interested in this, and this was something that I wanted to get. And it just made sense if I could save a whole year's worth of tuition and education costs and then just go to the School of Public Health and start my master's degree in my senior year of college. I feel like it just worked out pretty well. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it made sense to do it before I went to medical school. And I talked to a lot of individuals about this. But in medical school, it's really easy to get bogged down by all the minutiae of the health of that one individual. And I think it's important to have that mindset and that perspective before you're in that consultation room about all the other external factors that affect the health of that individual that you're seeing, right? So for example, it's very easy for a physician to just prescribe a drug for a particular ailment, but that person may not have the insurance to actually purchase that drug, right? Or, you know, they may not adhere to it because of the side effects or the cultural component associated with it. So all those things that I thought were really important to learn before I made my way to medical school and learn about all the different diseases.
The particular path you took has worked out well for you. Glad you did it in that order. All right, great.
Absolutely, yeah.
What was the hardest part of the med school application process for you?
There was two things that were particularly challenging. Taking the MCAT was tough. There's the whole section, which is the car section. And like I said earlier, English is not my strongest suit. So I struggled with that. I struggled with getting, it's a skill set that you need to acquire of reading passages really quickly and not focusing on all the details, but getting the overall picture. And it's something I struggled with. And I didn't do too well on, even like the day before my MCAT, I was still trying to figure out how do you do this? Right. And so that's something I struggled with. And then associated with the MCAT, I also had to take it in South Africa. So I was on my gap year, like when I was thinking of applying to medical school and taking my MCAT. So I went home, and that's where I studied for the MCAT. And the only closest location where I could take it was either South Africa or Dubai. So I had to get on a plane, an international flight, just so I could take my MCAT, which is completely ridiculous to think about when you're here in the US. And if you're in Boston, for example, there's just tons of testing locations that you can just go and take it on any day. So that was particularly challenging as an international student. And then the second part related to me being an international student was I felt truly alone in this process. There was no one really that I could turn to for advice and say, hey, you're also an international student who got into medical school. What is it like? What's the process like? Are you viewed differently as an international student? I had no one. And so in some ways, I just had to just hope for the best. And there was nobody wanted to provide the information. I had to rely on Student Doctor Network, and Student Doctor Network, is obviously the worst place to find information. And so that was particularly challenging in the whole process.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. We're going to get back to that a little bit later. But you obviously did something right. You did a lot right because you got into Harvard Medical School. Okay. Question now is, what do you like best about Harvard Medical School? And I don't mean the brand.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. I think that's a common perception, is that it's the brand. But at the end of the day, there's so much more to it than the ivory and marble towers that you see. So there's quite a few things I like about HMS. So I think the pass-fail curriculum that HMS currently have truly lends itself to creating a more collaborative space. And it's really easy to reach out to someone for notes or ask for help because you don't feel like you're ever competing with someone. Your grades are your own. It's all pass fail. And so at the end of the day, it feels like it's truly a community of students who are all trying to learn medicine. And no one is trying to be better than the other. The second thing is that out of all the faculty that I've had interactions with, every single one of them is truly committed to teaching and truly committed to improving the craft of teaching and making their curriculum better. Like, I can't tell you the number of times I've heard the word feedback over the course of my first year is because all the faculty are just constantly trying to solicit feedback so that they can be better at teaching and they can improve their curriculum and all the content as well. And then the third thing is also that we get to see patients in our very first year. So every Wednesday, even in your first year of medical school, you're starting to see patients and you have a whole clinical day. And that's really nice because for a lot of us, the patients are what drew us to medicine and to the profession. So that's always really nice. And then lastly, the case-based learning model also is fantastic. It's, you never find yourself wanting to fall asleep in class. Actually, you can't fall asleep in class. It's not just a lecture format. You're constantly engaging with other people and bouncing off ideas, even though if they're totally wrong, really, you're constantly engaged and you're constantly talking during class. And so I think that's, it's a really good model to teach.
And of course, when you see patients, you're basically, I mean, they're the case when you actually can, you know, so
yeah,
it sounds like highly relevant experience. What could be improved even at Harvard Medical School?
You know, there's a lot, I think, but the big thing that comes to mind is financial aid. And I think that, you know, you've probably heard in the news as well is that there's a lot of schools that are transitioning to this idea of medical school going debt-free, particularly for low-income students. And, you know, that's something that Harvard Medical School is still working on, something that in my past year at HMS, I have been advocating for and been part of trying to make this a reality here at HMS as well. Because what it means is that every single year, a large number of students who come from diverse backgrounds who are low income just can't afford to come to HMS. And the second thing is, it would be nice to have more sort of simulations, even though we do see patients and that's where we sort of get to apply a lot of our knowledge. But it would be nice to have more simulated patient encounters so that we truly get like the full breadth of experience of what we could potentially see. And I think that's something that I would definitely try to advocate for here at HMS as well.
Okay, great. Very interesting feedback. I guess the simulations would still be more real than written cases, right? I assume the cases are mostly written?
Yeah, the cases are mostly written. But I think just being in that environment where all the monitors are beeping and, you know, your patient is, you know, complaining that there's something or somebody is on a microphone saying that, you know, I'm in pain right now and you have to think quick on your feet. I think that's, those are experiences that would be nice to be incorporated in our first year as well.
Okay. Great suggestion. Now, HMS requires a research project. Do you have any idea what you intend to focus on for that project?
Yeah, I think it's, I'm still not fully set on it. I have to do it in my third or fourth year. But it's definitely going to be something, sort of a combination of something involved with global health, along with something related to healthcare management and healthcare administration. That's what I'm thinking right now. I'm also applying to the MD-MBA program as well here at HMS. And so I think if I do get accepted into that program, my scholarly project also has to be related to a business component to it as well. So that's why I'm thinking sort of something that merges global health with healthcare administration and business.
And why do you want the MBA?
So I think that's sort of a more recent career trajectory or a recent passion is this, after you see how the cookie is made, I feel like you see that So much of health revolves around access. I think that's the big thing. And I think that's what I'm most drawn to is even that's the reason I got my MPH is because individuals simply did not have access if they were living in rural communities. And I think that's what I want to get my MBA for is to also supplement that knowledge is that how do you provide that access in a cost-efficient and sustainable way, particularly in low-income countries such as mine as Tanzania, or even rural areas, for example, here in the US, which also experiences great shortages in healthcare as well.
Fascinating. We can talk a little bit more about the MBA after we finish the podcast, okay? You mentioned the difficulties faced by international students who want to study at a US medical school. And I'd like to divide those wannabe medical students into two groups. First, you have international students who have a BA or BS from a U.S. college. And then there are international med school applicants who pursued post-secondary education abroad, outside the United States, usually in their home countries. And let's now turn to F1 doctors. Well, first of all, what is F1 doctors? I mean, I know I gave a very brief synopsis at the beginning, but how does F1 doctors assist those two groups? Because I think they have distinct issues.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So F1 doctors, as you mentioned, was born earlier this year, but it's basically a group of us who truly understand what it's like to go through the entire medical school process as an international student alone, and which is why it's been so easy to garner support and gain mentors is because all of us know how challenging it was when we were doing it. So there's this real true need to give back to those individuals who come after us as well. So it's basically just a web-based platform or initiative that provides free mentorship to any international student who is considering applying to medical school or to dental school or to residencies here in the US. So the whole range of opportunities that are available in the healthcare professional field here in the US as well. So we're also thinking about expanding it to nursing and PA programs, but that's sort of taking some while. But right now we have the most of our mentors are MD mentors. So international students who are on an F1 visa, who are in medical school or in dental school in the US. And so for the two groups that you mentioned, I think, you know, there's definitely very different sort of advice or guidance for each group. So for the first one, for international students who have gotten their BA here in the US, most of us fall into that category. Most of the mentors do. And so we have conversations with students. It's just, you know, a one-on-one, you schedule a time with a mentor. And it's basically the mentor, for starters, answering any questions that you have about the process, right? I think as mentors, we aren't sort of knowledgeable about, is your GPA good enough or is your MCAT score good enough? Those are questions we can't answer, but it's more about like, you know, these are sort of the research things that I did. This is sort of the way I tackled volunteering on my application as well. And this is what I feel like made me stand out. Not that you have to have the same trajectory, but these are some of the experiences that I had that I can share with you. For those students, it's, you know, talking to mentors. And on top of that, we also have a list or a resources section on our website. And so on this resources section, there's a lot of information for these students about applying to medical school in the US. So for starters, it's what schools actually accept international students. At the end of the day, most international students know or have heard that the acceptance rate for international students is significantly lower. Right. And the reason for that is because only some of the top tier schools in the US will take international students. So it's very easy to conflate those two rates and those two acceptances, because is it because the international students are just not good enough as applicants or need to work significantly harder? Or is it because they're only allowed to apply to Harvard and Yale and Stanford?
The most selective schools.
Exactly, which already have really low acceptance rates. So that's one sort of challenge that's faced by international students. And the second one is the finances.
I was just going to say, they're the most expensive schools also.
Right, exactly. And as international students, you don't have access to federal loans, so you have to rely on either scholarship or institutional loans from the institution itself, or private loans, which have really high interest rates and expect you to start paying while you're in medical school. So to alleviate some of those challenges, back to the first group who have done their BA or BS here in the US, we have a list on our website of all the medical schools that accept international students and their financial aid policies. So I think that's like one of our top rated resources, because it just has all that information in one place. We also have done some webinars in the past that individuals can watch as well. And we also have some really cool partnerships with other organizations to ensure that international students who are applying and going down this path don't feel like they're doing this on their own. And then for the second group that you mentioned, for individuals who have done their sort of education or like college education elsewhere outside of the United States, for them, it's definitely particularly challenging because we don't have a lot of mentors who fall into that category.
It's much more difficult.
Right, exactly. And so, but what we do have is on our website, we have an Excel document of post-bac programs that accept international students. And so I think that is sort of the recommendation that we currently give, because based on all the websites that we've seen of medical schools, each one of them says we need some sort of US college education. Some of them will get away with Canadian colleges, but anywhere else, it's like you have to get some sort of transcript or education here in the US. And that's why we have our post-bac programs that accept international students.
Makes sense. It sounds like you're providing a wonderful service here. Now, how many mentors are there in F1 doctors, and how many students are mentees? How many students have been assisted by F1 doctors?
Yeah, so we have over 90 mentors right now. All of them we're practicing.
Only since May. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's
congratulations.
Quite an exponential growth over the last few months. And all of them are international, so on F1 status. Maybe some of our attendings might have a green card, but that's because they came and applied to medical school as an F1 and have now sort of transitioned into permanent residency. So far, we've had over 200 submissions to connect with a mentor and meet with a mentor. So that's where we're currently at. But, you know, I think it's something that's, you know, every single day we're getting in new requests. And so
congratulations. That's really exciting. Wonderful. Congratulations again. Now, I'm just curious, you know, especially in the MBA world, there's been a tremendous push to get business schools STEM certified, which allows the person on an F1 visa to stay in the United States and work for, I think it's called optional professional training, for up to 3 years. Are medical schools considered a STEM school?
I believe they should be. I'm not too sure about that entirely. Okay. I do know that, you know, after your medical degree, you do get the same 1 year OPT.
Right. Right.
Assume that it would fall under the STEM criteria as well.
Because STEM would increase it to 3.
Right. Yeah. You get that extension for 2 years. But I don't know if that I feel like it should.
You think so? I mean, science, technology, you know, I mean, right. Kind of fits. But obviously, there's certain technical requirements. Now, how do you manage the time demands of med school and running F1 doctors? I mean, from your description of your high school commitments, it sounds like you like being busy, but still.
Right. It's definitely challenging, to say the least. It just comes down to managing time and managing expectations. I think those are the two big things. So managing time, for me particularly, I do like to be quite busy. But at the end of the day, I think it's often important for me to say, okay, I have spent 3 hours working on this website for F1 doctors. I really need to stop and take a break from it and actually focus on school and studying and being a doctor. And then the second is managing expectations as well. It's hard because our entire leadership are all medical students. All of our mentors are medical students. So it's important not to expect that everyone will be able to, you know, give 3 hours worth of their time to this organization, because that can be quite a lot for some people. Right. And so just being very clear about, you know, what can you do on a weekly basis? Let's set some goals for this next month and let's try to achieve these goals, however small they may be. Even if it's, let's just recruit one more mentor, that's fine. As long as we have a set goal and we meet it, I think that's how you sort of do this and work with others in medical school.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you want to get an MBA in addition to the MD and the MPH that you already have. How do you see your career evolving post-medical school?
Definitely a career so I'm still very interested in infectious diseases. That's like at the heart of it all. And for that, definitely have to do internal medicine as a residency and then a fellowship for ID after. So that's still always been the goal. And with that degree in infectious diseases, the goal is to also try to travel home to Tanzania regularly, work there as a physician, and also train other doctors. And then the MBA comes in when I'm thinking more about sort of hospital-related infections and trying to reduce morbidity and mortality associated with that and sort of the health administrative tasks that are associated with that. I think that's where the MBA knowledge comes in, as well as when I go home, thinking about healthcare administration and access to healthcare in a cost-effective and sustainable manner in like rural Tanzania, which is significantly harder to do, and it's a very different application of the MBA. So two very distinct ways that I want to use my MBA is what I'm thinking right now.
Okay, sounds exciting. What would you have liked me to ask you?
I think these are some pretty comprehensive questions that you were able to come up with. You know, honestly, is it okay if I give sort of any last minute advice to students?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go for it.
I think it's really important to not get carried away in college trying to chase someone else's path to medical school. And that's something that I truly found myself doing, right? As an international student. So I came in and I knew I wanted to go to medical school, but I didn't know what does that look like. And I was reading that you have to take all these pre-med requirements and you have to have all these extracurriculars and everything. There were students in my class who had a ton of, you know, organizations that they were on, and they were leaders on all these organizations. And that's what I thought. I thought that's how I get into medical school, is if I do all those things. But you know, after a while, I realized that it's all, at the end of it, it's all just fluff, right? It has to be stuff that you are truly passionate about or you are truly committed to and that are part of who you are, right? So I was doing all these organizations that didn't really mean much. And at the end of the day, wouldn't mean much on my application either. It would just be filling up space. And so that's why in like my junior year of college, I dropped all my extracurriculars and I said, who is Azan? Like, what is Azan truly passionate about? And at the core of it, it's just a guy from Tanzania who likes infectious diseases. That's it. And that's as simple as it has to be. But then going off from there and saying, okay, if that's who I truly am at my core and that's what I'm interested in, I should make my application centered around that, right? So that's when I joined a research lab doing research. That's when I did more global health experiences as well. So it all came down to just this sitting down and saying, what am I truly passionate about? What do I really care about? And what do I really want to do? And it's important to create the path to medical school for yourself and not get carried away by what others are doing.
You know something? That is probably, or a flavor of what you said, is probably the most common answer to this question that I get from medical students. And it doesn't make it any less relevant at all, because I think it needs to be said again and again and again that med students, yes, you need to take your pre-med prerequisites and you need to get good grades in them, and you are going to need to take the MCAT probably. That might be changing now. But in terms of where you're going to get involved, it should be a reflection of your interests, your passion, and what drives you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like you said, it's fluff. Okay. So I think it's really, really important, an important message. I'm glad you shared it. And listeners, if you want to go back and listen to previous episodes where med students contributed, you'll see again and again and again, this theme comes up. I spent too much time doing what I thought I needed to do. I spent too much time worrying about how I'm going to get into medical school instead of trying to develop my interests and passions, etc. So I'm really glad you raised that. And again, it was a wonderful answer. So at this point, I don't want to impose on your time anymore. I want to thank you for sharing your inspiring story and squeezing this interview into a busy med school student schedule. Where can listeners learn more about F1 Doctors?
Sure. So you can go to our website. It's www.f1. So the letter F and then the number one, followed by doctor. .com. And the reason it's called F1 Doctor is because all of us are international students, and that's the visa that all of us are on to be here in the United States.
We'll link to F1 Doctors as well as to several articles both about and by Azan and other resources related to this podcast from accepted.com/388. Listener, thank you too for joining Azan Virji and me for Admission Straight Talk's 388th episode. Final reminder and a favor. Don't miss the med school admissions quiz. Find out if you are really ready to apply and competitive at your target schools. Take the quiz at accepted.com/medquiz today. And the favor, if you found this show valuable, please share your thoughts. Just go to lovethepodcast/AST and you'll be able to rate and review Apple Podcasts and other leading podcast sites. Doing so helps potential listeners find us, and we really appreciate the help. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.